Sometimes Forex trading can be a wild and woolly place to be. But Forex trading doesn't have to be the Badlands for you, partner. Instead, hunker down and bend your ear. You'll be burning the breeze in no time here at the Truth About FX Podcast.
Welcome, it's Walter here, and today we have a really special guest. It's Caroline Huey, and Caroline has an interesting story, don't you, Caroline, about how you've been dabbling in different areas of the trading world. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Walter, for having me.
So I'd love to hear a little bit about your story, your background, and how you got into trading and how you've been in different areas of the trading world, because you have actually a wide range of experiences, don't you?
I am not sure whether it's wild or it just happens to come through this way, like a natural path. So basically, I am a professional accountant, and about 4 years ago, I have decided to come back into the full-time accounting world as opposed to part-time consultant. And my kids were older, and I thought in order to be able to train them to be independent, I need not to be at home. So that's why I took an accounting manager role with a software company, which has become very successful here in Canada. In fact, they're one of I think they just recently won the top award for being the best cultural fit company in the whole Canada. Anyway, having said that, so I joined them while they were having the growth spurt, and all their revenues come in as USD, and we need to convert that into three different currencies, the Euro and GBP and also Canadian, just because we have an operations in Ireland, and we also have a lot of the vendors in UK. So with that role, basically I do a lot of treasury functions, and then I told myself that, my gosh, like they are in millions, and every time I have to convert, I have to think about the exchange rate, and I don't want to operate in the dark, although they told me that you can do whatever you want, Caroline, and just to make sure that we have a system, like being consistent. So when I was taking on that role, we actually have the Canadian dollars was really low. So actually, sorry, let me backtrack. No, USD was very low. Canadian was high. It was 3 years ago. Three and a half years ago. And so we really could not do much. So we basically locked in for a contract. They call it option contract. So you sell a call and you buy a put, you're locked into a particular rate. So that's very secure. And then as we know that a year later on, or two years before, then USD is starting to come back up, and then we get out of the contract. So I have to start thinking, how am I going to get better? And so that's the reason why I joined a local meetup group, and then I met different people, and I also took some private course, which allows me to know what is the Forex world, how do they watch the chart and stuff like that. But from that, I still could not understand a lot. Basically, I got more confused and confused. So because it's different when you are a retail trader, and also when you are institutional buyer, you don't look at the chart the same way. You're more long term for institutional investor. You look out 1 year, what is the USD, how's the USD dollar going to perform in a year's time? So I do a lot of forward contract, and we look at it half a year, every month we look a year out. So, and as a retail trader, usually you're more for the short term. So I couldn't combine those two concepts together as well as I wanted to. But I, even though I couldn't really use my learning through my mentor at that time for my job, but I did notice that I personally am very attracted to the Forex world, and I really actually wanted to pursue this as my full-time career, just like a lot of people. More importantly, I think it just suits my character. I'm very number-oriented, I'm very technical, and because of that, I actively pursue nighttime studying on my own, and I come across your website, and I just basically develop my own skills on the side, and I sometimes I trade over like the whole night, but I don't do those kind of things anymore. It's just during the initial stage. Yeah, so that's how I got into Forex.
Yeah, and so you've seen it from the banking side as well, you said?
Yeah, so more often than not, I would have to discuss with the banking representative, the treasury or the analyst, and ask them for their opinions. What do they think and how do they see the USD? And they use a few of the indicators to help them, like MACD, Bollinger Band. I think it's very common, and 50 days moving average, 200. Those are the common one that they see, and they will write their opinion. Every day I receive that, and sometimes I pick up the phone and call them and discuss with them. And they also notice all the selling and buying orders from the banking side, so they would be telling me. So, you know, like we have a lot of the selling order at this level, and so that's how they base their analysis on sometimes, because it depends on who the other players are. Do they want to buy or sell at what level? So
yeah, and so when you say that the banks tell you there's a lot of orders at a certain level, can you see that on the chart now with your experience? Is that something that you, because you hear this a lot where people talk about these certain levels and you can, quote, see them on the chart. Is that something that you would say that you can do now, that you can actually see on the chart where these particular levels might be?
I never really thought about that, but I think the levels that they see is like strong level. We probably, if you go for naked chart, you probably will see around is a zone. They are really pinpointing into like a particular, like they would say 1.3150, but the zone may be 1.3050 to 3150, like 100 pips difference. They always mention those level, but when I look at the chart, I think those are the daily support and resistance level.
Right.
Yeah, it's in line, but I really did not go too detail on it.
Right. So when they say, look, Caroline, we've got a lot of orders at 1.31, and then you look on the chart, that might be a support and resistance zone that you've noticed or something like that. Is that?
Yeah, sometimes it's minor support and resistance. I think for institutional buy and seller, it's different than retail in the sense that they buy and sell for a reason. They have commitments to fulfill. They need certain amount of money regardless of how the rate is doing, or they need to convert because they sign a contract or they engage themselves in some sort, yeah, like a forward contract. So that's why you see those levels. Sometimes it's the strong daily level, or sometimes it's the intraday level. But the intraday would not be 1 hour, like most
right.
likely
Got
around
it.
Four
Got
hours.
It. Yep. So and when they send you their reports and say, you know, we think this is what's going to happen with the Canadian dollar or what have you, have you found that information to be reliable?
Yes and no. They're not 100% right. But in general, I would say 80%.
Right. So I guess another way of saying is that, like, when you get these reports or you pick up the phone and you talk to the banks, what is the most important thing to you? Is it relying on the information and the reports that the banks send you, or is it just looking at the charts? Like, how do you make your decisions? Because you've got to move a lot of money around, right? Just like the other, you know, other big companies do. So what do you base your decision on?
I mainly base the decisions on my way of understanding the chart, number one. Number two is also based on when do I need the money and how much do I want to lock myself in, because we cannot go unlimited. We can only do certain amount each time on an annual basis. Like you can only lock yourself, say 60 million, and you can play around with it. So this month I can do 5, next month I can do 20, but I can never go exceeding that. Every month I come out of a contract, then I can do more. Like on an annual basis, there's always a running total, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, and so does someone oversee that? Someone that you report to, or someone says, make sure that you're in line with this?
No. I really have. We have a CFO, and I run it by him. But basically, I have my logics, and then usually, I would have to say whatever I say with an analysis, and that's how it gets done. But I'm really, really, really careful. Like, I look at the chart, and I consult with the bank, and I know the interest rate is important. The interest rate decision affects the currency like dramatically. So with those information, I help locking certain amount of money in what month as an institutional investor. I wouldn't call investor, it's just institutional participant.
Participant, exactly. That's right. Yeah, so that's interesting. So okay, so you've got this background. You've got your toe in the banking world. And what other aspects of the currency market have you seen? So I know you've seen it sort of from a business point of view, because you've got this business. Working for the business, you're in charge of basically moving the money around into different currencies. You also have a good working relationship with the bank, so you can talk to them and get information from them. But what are the other areas that you've also been in?
That's basically it. Like from the forex standpoint, my treasury experiences allows me to notice that forex is a fascinating place when you are diligent, when you do your homework, but it's definitely not a gambling place. Not a gambling place, meaning you don't randomly, like I know a lot of the times you have webinars and you flip the coin, do buy and sell and do 30 trades and see how that goes.
Yeah.
in real life, when you have that much amount under your belt, you really have to think. Whatever it is, you have to come up with a reason whether it's buy or sell. Sometimes I'm not correct. I remember I was worried that the Canadian dollar is, I can't remember, going up or down. I worry about the USD going down because we always get USD. And then it was a big correction. I think 1.21, going to 1.25 and coming back. And I was really, really worried that, I cannot afford not to lock any money. So back, even as an institutional participant, I let my fear to take a hold of me. So I actually locked in quite a bit at the lower level. And then, of course, we all know the chart, the USD Canadian, it just kept on going up after that. Once it hit, I don't know, 1.25, I think that was it. I don't have it in front of me. It's just going by my memory.
Right, yeah, right. So you learn, you live and you learn, I guess.
Yeah, and they are not my money. But you still have responsibility, and so anyway, when you do million, it's quite a lot of money.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It makes a huge difference. Yeah, yeah.
I know. Right. That's right. Like my annual salary, maybe.
Yeah, they just do it all in just the difference, just by mistiming it just by a little bit. Yeah.
I was suggesting to my CFO that why don't you base a part of my salary to like a bonus system. If I help you to make this much, as opposed to not planning, we will have to set up some sort of like a measuring scale. He said, no, we're not giving you that incentive. Then you'll be like full-time doing this.
Right.
Anyway, that's just a side joke.
It makes sense though, because you're saving them money. I mean, you're saving the company lots of money if you do it right.
If you do it right, yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you're not incentivized in doing these trades, but obviously they understand that what you're doing is quite important, because you can save them millions if you do it the right way. And so really you're relying mostly on the charts, and you get a little bit of information from the banks. And that's basically how you base your decisions. How many decisions do you make a month?
Well, actually, it's not how many. It's we have a certain amount that, as I explained earlier, so we have a running total. And if I see good opportunity, I every day I watch the chart. If I see a good time to go in to lock in some USD forward contract, then I would do it. Like, it's not how many, it's just that it's a constant roll.
Right.
Like every day I looked at it.
Yeah. So you're just kind of waiting. You're just sort of waiting, really. Yeah.
Yeah. And also for Euro and GBP, we have to move around. Sometimes we don't do as much. Those are really minor. But mainly it's USD and Canadian, because our operation, the head office is here in Canada. And the biggest item is obviously the payroll.
Of course.
So
some banks, I know I've heard stories, some banks actually... at the end of the year, when they pay their bonuses and things like that, they'll often take trades, because they know that they're transferring the money for their own payroll is going to affect the market, and they'll often take trades around that time too. The trading desk will as well, because they know that, you know, basically they're going to move the market with these large transactions for the company. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, and also the month end value is important. The month end. I didn't really understand it before. Why do we have month-end flow when we are doing a trading? Because I'm learning as an institutional participant and also as a retailer. Why the day every day at almost at the end of the day, you see some movement going on, and why is it so important? Or even month-end, it's because we have to, especially USD dollar, a lot of the companies mark their end month-end value to the USD, and so the USD value is important for the financial reporting purposes as well. And now that on the back end side, I have seen one trader wipe out the whole account, even though you can be winning the whole month. And if you're not careful on the last day, not whole account, but like wipe out significantly.
Right.
So you can incorporate that in your rules, in your trading rules, that you don't trade the last day or something like that.
So it's the last trading day of the month you're talking about, obviously. The last trading day of the month where they mark their accounts to
the box.
Yeah. And so so you were talking earlier offline before we were recording this about your experience with the your other experience you had with the hedge funds. Can you talk a little bit about that, because I found that fascinating?
My desire wanting to join the hedge fund. Is that right?
Yeah. You were talking about that and the qualification. Yes. That was interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So what happened was, okay, so I really want to join the Forex world, either as a retail investor or retail trader or with a group. And I thought that, okay, well, this is just my mindset. I thought that individually, it's just me. And I'm learning the trading from your forum, from the books that I read. It's all great. But sometimes I feel that if I can talk it out loud with a group, I feel that I will be more successful or consistent, and I like to be in a group. And with that mindset, I thought maybe I can join a hedge fund and basically trade together in a group environment. So I pursue that avenue, and there's a local person here that said that he has connection with placing traders with a hedge fund, and he earns commissions if you are successfully being placed. And I said, oh, okay, all right, so why don't you try placing me? And I didn't know that you actually have to go through competition. So what happened with that one, I only picked one. So because that one, the timing and the location is good. Because there are some hedge funds, they are located in Seattle, and I live in Vancouver, and I really don't want to go there for 1 week and come back on the weekend.
So you had to physically go to a location for this period of time.
Yes, those hedge fund companies require the traders to be in the location, correct? Okay, so this particular one is a local one in downtown Vancouver, and so we have to enter into a 3 weeks competition. You have to trade your own account live with your own money, and they get access to see your trades real time. And they have software to analyze you or like on a daily basis. So at the end of each week, I believe there were 30 people going for three positions. And every week they would tell a group of 7 or 8 people that thank you for your time. You no longer make it. I was really nervous at the end of week number one, and I didn't really do too crazy. Like my risk tolerance was so low, but obviously my reward is also not very high. And basically about break even for the first week. Apparently a lot of people fail. Yeah, so I was still in the group after the end of week number one. Actually, I went all the way to week number three, the final week. And I believe in between there's an NFP trading day. And I did trade on that day, and I trade UCAD because that's the pair that I know the best. Oh my gosh, I got a phone call from this intermediate person, and he said that, why did you choose the NFP? They don't like you when you do that, and they're about to kick you out if you do that again, or whatever. But I said, well, I won't do it again because it's only 3 weeks. We only have one NFP. So, and anyway, so I finished, but I didn't make it. I think maybe the top 8, but definitely not top 3. And yeah, but throughout that exercise, I feel that if someone is watching you, your mindset is different. Like, you do get nervous because it's not just you and you yourself. It's you being watched in a screen by other people. Even though they don't know you, they don't see your face, but you feel that you're naked. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, in psychology, we call it the Hawthorne effect, which is basically what you're saying. Exactly. As soon as you're being observed, you change your behavior. In fact, they know, you know, that's the same thing with subatomic particles. When they watch subatomic particles, the same thing. They change. So it's fascinating, you know, that it sort of extends throughout different things. Yeah,
and my body is tense. I'm always tense. I'm placing trades like with extreme carefulness. Like, anyway, I just feel so tense. So I wasn't sure whether I want to work for a hedge fund anymore after that. But I so anyways, during that period, it is the time that I met a Switzerland guy. His name is Victor. And I constantly try to outreach to send my trading results to different people. And he's one of them that I sent to. And he gave me some hints on, I think your results would be better if you have a different broker, or the commission rate is different, or spread is different, and a little bit comments here and there. And then I would keep him on my radar. Every 6 months we would talk, and I would continuously sending my trading results to him. So and then last year he came to Vancouver for a business trip, and we met in person. I think he was here for about 3 weeks, and we met quite a few number of times, and discussed about different things. And so now I'm working with him.
Right. So so talk a little bit about that, because that's a fascinating transition to go from applying for the hedge fund and just missing the cut to now you're working with this broker. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so basically, I always ask Victor that, do you know, because he has many connections, and I said, do you know anyone here in Vancouver? Or even like at that time, I said, I don't really care if it is Seattle, I would go too if you can set up that connection. He said, yeah, I would keep you in my connection. And then, during the trip that he was here, we talked about education, we talked about the forest community, we talked about many different things, and we share quite similar value that a lot of the brokers out there, they're not really clean broker. They're market maker, and because he has over 10 years brokerage experiences, so he was able to explain to me about that. And then he also have a vision at that time that he wanted to start his own brokerage firm, but nothing was set in stone. And he went back to Switzerland, and then we maintained contact. And then later on, he said that, "Caroline, I have decided to have my own brokerage, and I really want you to come and work for me, and you can be a representative in the North American and also Asia, because I speak Cantonese and also Mandarin." And he said that you will be a good person to be a bridge between Europe and Asia. And I said, "Oh, wow, that's wonderful. The door just opens. I didn't really look too hard." And I mean, I guess I was looking hard. Otherwise, I won't be sending all my trades out. But it's not like I'm going for a competition. I'm tense. I'm being nervous. I feel this and feel that. No, it was just natural. So that's how I decided to quit my full-time job. Partly because of the burnout. Like, you're constantly doing full-time role. Well, when you say full-time, it's not 9 to 5. The few times that it's just so many things to do that you actually work a lot of the, you know, burn your midnight oil, that type of thing. And I don't want my mind to be so busy. And so I decided to come out and work part-time for the brokerage firm, and also have few clients on my own and keep my accounting clients. And I feel much more relaxed. When I'm much more relaxed, I can trade better, and I can think better and a bit more creative.
Right, right. So what is the expectation that you will offer for the brokerage? What are they looking to get from you?
Oh, so basically, I handle all the back end. It's not that many people. The head office is actually in London, and there's a sales office in Moldova and also in Switzerland and in Vancouver. And so we talk almost daily on the back end issue, or we have new clients, we talk about compliance. So it's more administration stuff, and also getting to know the clients better, because we have our own product, we have managed account clients. It's kind of similar to James. He has his own fund, but he's not a broker. He has a private fund, am I right?
Yeah, James Kensington in the forum. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
He has his private fund. So we also have our own product, and so we have managed account client that would choose certain products, and we communicate with those clients if they have questions about strategy or this and that. So it's more on that.
Right, right. That makes sense. Yep. And so, you know, there's a lot of misunderstandings and concerns about brokers. So can you tell us more about this broker that you work for? Because, you know, you had mentioned market makers. Some people are confused, and they don't really know if they should trust their broker, if it's a market maker or an ECN or STP or whatever. So what do you know about that?
Yeah, I think the basic rule of thumb is you look at the broker and see how much leverage they give it to you. That's your best guidance. If they give you 1 to 500, you know they're a market maker. That's no way you would be able to have your trades out in the market order when the other party will give you 1 to 500, because they are the one who takes your trade and they expect you to lose. And that's why a lot of the brokerage, when they have the license in Cyrus, they give you high leverage. By the way, it's changing now. I'm not sure whether you heard of it. Cyrus, the securities commissions, they have now gone down that you can only do 1 to 50.
Really? Right.
And I think a lot of the... Yeah. It just became... I think unless you, on the KYC form, on your Know Your Client form, that they say, "I have experience, I can do this," and then you can get exemption. But by default, you can only do 1 to 50. I believe that's the new rule. So anyway, our license is licensed by FCA. It's the UK licensed broker by the Financial Conduct Authority. They are by far one of the most rigid one. And our brokerage offers 1 to 100, which is the standard. But having said that, because Cyrus has changed, even for them. So FCA most likely will issue a memorandum and also will probably change the requirement to a lower leverage requirement. So a lot of the brokerage will probably go out of business just because the way the business model work is they take your trade and all those people they just blow up, 95% of people blow up their account and they take all your money, right? But if you don't allow that high leverage, and people cannot gamble as much, I guess. and that will really shrink the whole industry.
Yeah, absolutely.
If that makes
sense. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It makes perfect sense. I mean, the brokers that offer the lowest leverage have always been the brokers that have the longest lasting clients because of what, you know, just like you said, in the high leverage, they're always looking for new blood. They're always looking for new clients because they just burn out so fast and then blow up.
Yeah. So that's your rule number one for the people, retail traders out there. I actually don't know any of these as a retail trader. You don't know. You just want your strategy to be successful and that's it. You don't know whether your broker is, like I did not care about the spread and the commissions back then in the first year or first part of my journey anyway.
And what are the other things that you would look for when you're you know, just as advice to the listeners, you're looking for a broker, what would you suggest that they do?
I think you look for the broker that, if it is a UK broker, FCA, fantastic. They have to have a certain amount of monies put into a segregated account in order to keep their license. So you, and also your account is being protected, there's insurance covered. So is you feel assurance that they're not going to run away with your money. So, and also you look at the leverage and you also look at the spread, obviously, and you can compare that. I think there are websites that can compare and you can use the, you know, the major pairs and see whether your broker is giving you a good spread, and usually for the most liquid one, the spread is low, and also the commissions. You look at the committed commissions, because at the end of the day, they are all factors that will affect your performances.
Right.
When you look at your P&L, right? Like if you charge me a lot on commissions but low on spread, my net result is still lower. Like you have to put them all on. Well, you don't have to. You just export all this data out and then you can compare.
Yeah, and you've done that obviously. So when you trade your own personal account, how do you do this? Do you do it in the same way that you do for your job where you're sort of just sitting on the sideline a lot of the time? You just wait for that perfect opportunity to jump up on the daily charts or the 4-hour charts? Or how do you approach your trading?
Oh, I have switched back and forth for so many times. But I mean, I'm no saint, definitely. The fact that I work for the brokerage firm doesn't make me to be a fantastic trader. But I just notice a lot of the traders' behavior, good or bad. Even good traders, they have bad days. And when they are in their bad, because I see all the back-end trades. And even though they are good traders, when they have the back-end days, and you need to have a proper risk profile. Without that, you basically give up everything, like everything that you have made so hard.
So what do you mean by that? Explain what you mean, a proper risk profile.
Say, for example, our brokerage is 1 to 100. And if you have small amount, big amount, doesn't matter. Let's say just regular 10,000 account. And you have been consistently applying your risk 2% or 3% or whatever percent you're comfortable with. And then you slowly bring yourself up to, say, double your account, say 20. And I've seen it. And then you feel so confident. I mean, I don't know that person. I'm just saying, you feel confident. You obviously must feel confident because you double your account. You started to take the complete leverage instead of stick to your 2%, 3%, 4% rule. But that one trade that you did could really wipe you because you took a bigger leverage than normal. And it just so happened that it turned against you. And when you're probably frozen, you don't know what to do because that trade did not get close until really, really low. And it wiped you back to not zero, but your 100% gain could be wiped out to zero and you're back to 10,000. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
Or sometimes it's even more. I have not seen a trader in that I know, yeah, because we have many different clients, and I only look at certain group that have gone, keep on going without a major setback, if you understand what I'm trying to say.
If they have a major setback, what do they do then?
They actually stop for a while and come back slow again.
Yeah, because they have a plan, basically. Exactly, yeah, yeah.
But yeah. As an educator, like you yourself, you probably want to teach them that you don't want to have a major setback. If you always have your 2% rule, it's very hard to wipe out 100% of your gain. Because it will take so many trades to wipe it out if you always have 2% rule.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Because that major setback, you might not be able to recover. Not everyone can recover. And they might close the shop and goodbye, right? Because it's something that not everybody can handle it well.
Yeah, obviously a lot of people, they overestimate the amount of drawdown that they can withstand. They think, oh no, I'll be fine if I have a 30% drawdown. And then when they hit 20% drawdown, they're completely, like, they're in shambles because they're unable to handle it. And it's too difficult for them. So it's just, yeah, yeah, it's one of those things. When you at the brokerage, they have managed accounts. What do some of the managed accounts look like? Like, what sort of drawdowns and things like that? Do you see that? Do you have access to that data?
Yeah. So we have different traders. Currently, we have four, and so the swing is quite high. It's not like what you and I are comfortable with, like 2%. No, the swing could be 15%, 20%, at least for the product that we have. But on the upside is from January to now, one trader would make over 100%, but the swing is not 2%. The drawdown is not like 10%. It's 15 to 20%. So, but the data is there that, you know, that trader can generate over 100% from January till now. The other trader, one of the trader, I think a 60%, and then the other one, I think less than that. But I think we are retail trader. If we don't talk about managed account, just as a retail trader, if you can make 3 to 5%. Per month, I consider as very, very good. I mean, even 1 to 2% per month is really good. And in the initial 3 years, I was really only a break-even trader. Like I make and I lose, but I always stay break-even. And that is good too, because...
No, that's really good. That's really good. It's better than I did. Yeah, yeah.
Like, because you don't have to go through that psychological ride. And I'm a very conservative type of person, because I'm an accountant and I have to calculate all my risks, and sometimes too conservative. So I can never do 15 minutes type of trade or 1 minute. I can't even think that fast. So I'm more like you. I like daily chart, 4 hours chart, and 1 hour is already very noisy for me. But when I first started, I go with 1 hour. That's why I continuously lose, and I didn't really understand. And then finally, I decided to, maybe I should go for the higher time frame. I've never even heard of 8 hours chart before.
Right, right.
Anyway, yeah, so...
Yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah, so you're just finding it settling in. It's really good that you were break-even in the beginning, because most traders are horrible losers in the beginning. And so I'm looking forward to hearing at the event some of the things that you found to be useful in terms of helping you get past that break-even stage. So today, what kind of a trading routine do you hold? Like, what do you do? Like, how is it... What do you do every day? Like, is it that you check the charts first thing when you wake up, or are you checking the charts when you go to work, or how when you go home, or how do you do your trading now?
I trade a lot of the UCAD, but I also look at few pairs. So I don't look at 28 pairs. I only look at maybe 6. And in the morning, around 6 o'clock, I would basically have the charts open and see whether there's a trade going. And I also look at daily chart, so in the afternoon at about 2 o'clock. But my morning is quite busy because I work with the UK group, and I get up at 4 a.m. every morning, and I would be talking and having meeting with them, sometimes in Asia as well. Like we have clients there, or we have a sales representative there, and then we have to collaborate. So between 4 to 8, I'm quite busy working on the administrative side kind of things. But usually between 6 to 7, I do my setup, and I would have 1 hour to do the setup and looking at the chart. And definitely in the afternoon, the 2 o'clock here in Vancouver, I look at the chart and see whether there's any trades to take. I don't take many trades.
So you would. So that's basically the close, right? Because that's 5 p.m. in New York. So you're looking at the close, right?
Yes, yeah. Yes. Very slow trader, like daily. It's just my character. The only one thing I think what trading does for me personally, and maybe for a lot of people too, is once you know about who you are, you so much better, not in trading, in everything, every aspects of your life. You know what you can do, you know what you can do, and you acknowledge that. And like I acknowledge that I cannot have not sleep. I used to give up my sleep and train nonstop, and that was a big mistake. I thought I could train my sleep to taking naps here and there. No, I couldn't. So I would not do that. Or I know my energy level is low on certain period of the day. I would definitely don't look at the chart. Like I just know what my limitations are, and also know what type of person I am. And when you know yourself and the type of personality you are, you would not even go close to something that you will not succeed, because you will not like those. It's not called fixed mindset that, oh, I will never succeed in this. It's just that it doesn't suit you. It's a tailor suit. It have to fit your size.
Yeah. And so for you, what is it? Are there any indicators on your chart when you're looking at the charts, or what do you use?
Actually, no. I basically have lines. I just draw lines and the support and resistance.
Well, that's great. So Caroline, so I guess knowing what you know about brokers and knowing what you know about the banks and everything, what's here's somebody who's come into trading. Let's say I've been trading only for the last 6 months, and I say, look, Caroline, what do I need to do? How can I make this work? As someone like yourself who has so much experience in different areas, you applied for the hedge fund, you were used to move money around for a company, lots of money around for a company, you're working for the broker, you had relationships with the banks and you saw how they saw things. What do you say to the new trader who's just trying to make it work? What's the advice?
I think so learning about trading, it's good to have good strategy and like all the knowledge, but ultimately you have to know yourself first. Like you have to spend a significant time to understand your thinking process, your mindset, your fear level, your confidence level. What am I? And once you understand yourself, you will be automatically be attracted to certain trading style and not going for like kind of like browsing website. There's certain website you can look at it, but you don't like what they say, and you turn or you keep on turning. It's turning from website to website to keep on serving. So trading is the same. You go from system A, B, C, D. And I've done that. Like I have done so many different indicators. I would go on Forex Factory. There are tons of different people telling you like 1,000 posts, and you go on strategy, and I even tried those. But in the end, you're just trying to go out, like instead of going inside, you're trying to copy, trying to get information that is successful for others, but they might not be for you. Like once I would tell all the new traders to, before you go anything further, you can keep on studying, going through your program and your personal trading course and everything. But the most important part is if you have a personal mentor, not in trading, but actually helping you to figure out yourself, that would be fantastic. If not, then you spend some time every week. You set aside 2 or 3 hours to go through your thinking process or meditation. Just something that you know you need to give yourself, to give your permission to yourself, to understand yourself, should I say? Because we always try to please others, to want to know what other people's needs are. it's hardly that we want to know what we want, what we need. And I don't think I don't think it's selfish, and I think it's actually a good thing to understand what your needs are and when before you can serve others. So then once you do that, then you will find an equilibrium between your trading strategy and your character. And once you can just combine them together, you will be successful, I guarantee you.
That's great advice. That's really good advice. Knowing yourself, taking the time to understand what you want, and then you can set your path from there. That's really good advice, Carolyn, and I really appreciate it. And looking forward to seeing you at the event. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
See you soon. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.